This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it up at Studio Jeans at your mom's house. I'm your host, Ryan Sickler. I'm on social media at Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com. Quick date, Baltimore, September 14th. I'm coming back. One night only. Get your tickets for that show. Any in-town dates, just go to my website. It's all there for you to check out. And as I say every week, thank you. Thank you for the messages, the feedback. Thank you for supporting the show. I mean, it's still new. It's still a new show. You know, I've been podcasting for a while, but this is still a new show, and I'm learning a lot about everything. So thank you for the support. Thank you for supporting the sponsors. That's how we keep this free show free. And anything you want to know about the show, the honeydewpodcast.com. Go there. That's where you follow the social media, the email, all that merch, everything. We got some new merch coming up for you soon, too, as well. And very excited for this episode here today. Somebody I've been wanting to have on for a minute. As he said, we're family. And I say all the time, if you're new to the show, we're highlighting the lowlights over here. If you're a fan of the underdog, this is your show. These are the stories behind the storytellers. And today's storyteller, ladies and gentlemen, Joey Diaz. All right.
What's up? What's up? How are you there?
Listen, I have to say something. You just did a quick jump. I've been watching this video of you. When the Star Spangled Banner comes on, and you have your head down, and when that shit kicks on, you jump so hard, it makes me, that just out of the gate makes me laugh. You know the video I'm talking about?
I love the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, you jumped up so quick.
I fucking love it. I fucking love it. Like, it's, you know, when I came here, like, you know, they let you into school. When you're an immigrant, you know, you come here and you walk around for a few days, then they let you into school, and all of a sudden you start reciting that.
The Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, when I did it in kindergarten, like, we were, you got to remember, when I got to this country, it was 1966. When I busted into the school system, it was 68. We were involved in a war. We had just finished the Cold War with the Cubans and Russia. You know, there was underground shelters in every building with Tang. Remember Tang?
Tang, I do. My grandma
had like fucking Spam.
That's the astronaut, aren't you?
Yeah, sardines. Every basement was prepared for a nuclear thing, but
we had the pear jars, mason
jars. Yes, mason jars.
Yeah, we had all like vegetables.
Everybody had a fallout
yes,
shelter.
We people, did have
people,
one.
People, if you're young, a fallout shelter is when you go when fucking Iran sends a missile over here. You, back in the '60s, you would go into the fallout shelter. Thank God you never had to go into them. But patriotism was big, and it was bigger for me because I was from another country. And I was just trying to fit in. So the Star Spangled Banner, I Pledge Allegiance, you know. It's so funny how right now there's a thing in the news that I hate to highlight, but let's talk about it, about a guy who said, go back to your own country. Let me fucking tell you something. 20 years ago, that was a staple in New York. You couldn't just talk from the language from your country in New York when I was growing up. They would look at you after 3 minutes and go, oh, America.
Really? You speak in Spanish?
Yeah, right, Spanish. On. Whatever the fuck you were talking that wasn't New Yorkish, they would say, oh, cut it out. You're in America. And then you would yell something back, and then they would yell back. If you don't like it, go back to your own fucking country. But on this fucking street, you're speaking English. And that's it. And, you know, it was something that was, I remember because it was said to me.
So here's what I want to talk to you about, because I want to go back to the beginning. You said you came to the United States in 1966.
66.
So how old are you at that age?
3.
All right. So do you have no memories of?
No, okay, nothing.
So this is your country. You get here at 3 years
3.
Old. And where do you begin? Where does the
union?
And are your parents married? Are they together?
My parents are married.
Okay.
They're somewhere in New York. I remember waking up in a house in Union City, a block and a half from my mother's house, across from a school called either Robert Waters or something.
I love your mother.
Tragedy struck. My father died.
Okay. How?
Heart attack at the bar. Attack.
How old?
37.
Ooh.
So my mom didn't like the Jersey house. She didn't. Once somebody dies, you move.
But so, how old were you when he died?
Sorry. 3.
Okay, so it happened. All this is happening just
right,
as they get
three.
Here.
So okay. Then we go to 89th Street and Riverside Drive.
Just you and your mom.
Just me and my mom.
No siblings.
No siblings. I'm with my mom 24 hours a day.
And her family's where?
Cuba.
All back in Cuba.
Except so for my uncle herself. Is in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah, I still talk to
so
my
she's
uncle.
Still by still herself. All right. And how old your mom? Single mom? New country?
38, 39. But my mom had been here as a teenager.
Okay, all right.
My
all right.
mom had been here and knew the language and already was running numbers. Then she went back to Cuba. She went back to Cuba.
Okay.
What happened to my mother was very interesting. My mother was 16 or 15, and she went to a dance with my aunt, like a high school dance. And somewhere along the dance, my mom noticed that her sister Rosita was missing. So she went outside, started yelling for Rosita, and she found a guy raping Rosita.
Whoa.
My mom took a glass, broke it, and stabbed the guy.
Wow.
The guy dies.
What?
They take my mother and ship her out of Cuba that night. Just a young kid. Like, remember Vito Corleone was
yeah.
half retarded? He got the Ellis Island. He's singing songs and shit. That was my mother, right?
Wait, so they literally took her.
My family.
Your whole family.
Put whatever pennies they had, as poor as they were.
And said, you're out.
Dude, you're out.
Where?
New York City.
They were sent to New York City.
Sent to Miami.
Okay, this wasn't a work.
She had distant cousins in New York City.
Wow.
She went to New York, stayed with them for a while, snuck into the country.
God.
You know, you got to remember, there was no TSA.
Right.
You know, you could just give them a fucking piece of paper then, and if you could fog the bottom of the glass, they'd let you in. Fog this. Okay, you're in. You know, this is way before anything.
Right.
You know. There was no drug smuggling going on, so it was wide open border. So she came in, moved to like the city or something, went to work for a fucking numbers guy, and she met a girl. And her and that girl became partners. Like they were a team for a couple of years.
And doing what? Running numbers?
Running numbers. And then her and my dad met in New York, but they went back to Cuba because my grandmother was sick. So when we were in Cuba, my mom had my sister, who's about 4 years older than me, and me. Then something went down. Like, I couldn't get all the accurate stories. I get bits and pieces from my uncle. He's 80, and he lives in Glendale, and I went to a Dodger game with him.
That's your source?
So, but whenever I ask him something, he tells me a little bit more than I want to know, so I stopped asking him. You know what I'm saying? So I had to stop. So then they came back, and my mother used that girl's name to get back into the States. When my mother went back to Cuba, she went back as a lady named Sophia Cecilia. She was a Puerto Rican woman. That was the mother of the girl my mom hung out with.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so then my mom came back. My dad died a few months later. And here we are on 89th Street. I was probably four and a half. And then that apartment got raided.
For what? What were they?
Numbers.
Numbers?
It was a shakedown. I still remember the cops sitting me down on the couch.
Really?
And then separating me and my mother. But my mother had already trained me, shut your mouth. You don't know nothing. You know, my mom was already training me in a way that I didn't know. And then my mom had a bag with cash and all the numbers receipts. So what happened was my mom had the building wired. The landlord called. The landlord called, and I answered. It was like 8 in the morning, and they're like, the cops are on their way up. So I woke my mother up. My mother got up, went in the closet, and took a bag out, the receipts and the cash, went to the kitchen. There was a balcony under her, an old lady. She would duke the old lady like 50 a week. And she threw the bag under. The bag landed on the second floor on her balcony. The cops rushed in. There was nothing to arrest my mother for. But I still remember my mom being handcuffed and me sitting on a couch. And then the landlord, and then they left. They didn't arrest my mother. They gave her a ticket. And it was basically a shakedown in those days.
Yeah.
If they find 10 G's, they take six of it. And they leave you four and you don't go to jail. But my mom was hip to them, whatever, and they kept threatening my mom. 2 days later, we moved around the corner to 205 West 88th Street between Broadway and Amsterdam, and I went to a grammar school named PS 166.
Okay.
Stayed there till like the third grade, second grade, then third, fourth, and fifth. I went to Sacred Heart School for Boys. That was private school.
Why did you change schools? Were you starting to have trouble? Were you...
I just admitted to my wife something that a lot of people don't know about me. I didn't want to tell my wife until my daughter got older. From the age of 4 to 6, I was a very sickly kid. There was a lot of problems with me. There was mental problems with me because of my father.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a sickly kid. I was allergic to maple syrup. I had stuff problems with my ears. I had problems with my throat. I couldn't breathe at night. You know, they knew me by first name basis at Medical Center on 165th Street. And they knew me like I went to the hospital between the ages of 4. Without exaggeration, if I average it out, it was every 10 days.
Damn.
Like, I wouldn't go for 2 weeks, but then I'd go 3 days in a row.
And it would always be something else. It wouldn't be consistently it was asthma just, or
was,
whatever.
I was a sickly fucking kid. I was really skinny. You know, my mom didn't know what to do with me. I didn't really like a lot of the food, so they made me drink emulsive of cod.
What is that?
Emulsive of cod is like the fish grinded down. His eyeballs, his feet.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. You go to CVS now because kids are pussies. They flavored it because these little faggots are young. They're like vanilla flavored and fucking strawberry.
They really
flavored.
Have this shit?
Look
I'm
it up.
Look, I am.
It's called emulsive of cod.
All right.
And I'm going to tell you something. A couple of years ago, I went back on it.
You did?
I found a little bottle. First couple of days, I fucking puked it up. But after a while, I felt how much better I felt. It's a tough fucking swallow. But your dick will never die. You'll never get sick. You'll never get AIDS. You'll never get dementia. If you drink that fucking stuff, Scott's emulsive and fucking, you'll never get nothing. Nothing.
Love.
No dementia. Nothing. It's a proven fact.
One a day?
I don't know how it is now, but when these fucking people had it before, they just threw the fish in the blender. His tongue, his brain, and it was a milky paste.
And you drank that shit?
I was not allowed to go to school until I drank in the morning. So she would give me a fresh glass of orange juice, and she'd be waiting with the spoon, and I'd have to drink it and fucking down the orange juice, and I'd puke it, and she'd go, let's do it again. I mean, it got that bad. Like, I was that sickly of a kid.
Well, why wouldn't you want to tell anybody that? Why didn't you want to admit that?
Because I didn't want, if my daughter would get sick, I didn't want it to be like her genetic. Like, I didn't know. My daughter does have asthma, but it has not affected her like it affected me at that age. I was allergic to dogs.
Really?
I was allergic to cats. I was allergic to just my eyes would swell up. My throat would swell up, and I would choke.
And did this fish shit, did it cure you of allergies, or did it just protect you from them?
No. What happened was my mom went to see, in Cuba, what's the big thing is Santeria. So my mom went to see a Santeria lady that she knew for a long time and asked her. And it said that that I needed to be inducted because for health reasons. And by the age of 6, by the age of 5, I would go up to 100. I lived on 88th Street, but a bunch of little faggy white kids, and they were nice kids and stuff, and we had a good time. You know, we played kick the can and stickball and hot peas and butter. Go get your mother. We would. You ever play hot peas and butter? Go get your mother.
No.
That's when you hide a belt with a metal buckle. You have to hide it. So I hide it, and all of us are playing. And we're in this room, and I'm like, you're hot, but the base is 30 yards away. So if you find the belt, you get to whip us all the way till we find it. And it's up to you whether you want to whip us with the belt or the metal side. So if you whip somebody
you
with the metal
sign.
You
can't play that game now. Remember when you could play shit like that? Like, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to fuck you up all the way back. Until you can say ABCD, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and whistle.
Hot peas and butter, go get your mother. The only thing, I hate Bill Cosby before the rape. Like, I always thought he was a sack of shit. But he really always was a sack of shit. Like, I thought he was a sack of shit. And it was confirmed to me in 93 at the Colorado Festival that Judy Brown put on. And in 93 or 94, he showed up and I saw him and he was talking shit about dirty comics. So I never liked him. I always knew he was a pukey fuck. But the only thing he ever said on his one good album was he spoke about a game named Buck Buck.
Yep.
That's another New York City game.
He used to have that on Fat Albert, too.
That's Buck Buck. We Buck Bucked every day. You can't Buck Buck.
You run and jump on somebody's back, right?
Yeah, you jump on somebody. That's why all these kids got that nucleosis shit with the fucked up back.
Scoliosis.
Whatever the fucked up. These little fat kids today, they all got scoliosis. Because they don't play Buck Buck. When I play Buck Buck, dog, not one kid in my neighborhood's got scoliosis. He might have had a punctured lung, but scoliosis did not exist in my neighborhood because we played Buck Buck, and the girls played, too.
So if I remember correctly, so somebody grabs on a wall, whatever, they bend over. You're standing up, bent in a 90.
So I'm the pillow. I'm
and then you
the
connect like a centipede,
with my
right?
neck, and we all connect like centipedes.
And then somebody sprints from back and
30
leaps.
Yards, sprints and leaps.
And legs out, like drop their ass on your spine.
On your spine.
And you're supposed to try to hold.
You're holding on. So what you do is
But then does that person stay and another one comes or do they get off?
We have
it
strategies.
Just keeps going, right?
Some assholes would just jump off, you know, they'd play to be frogs.
Yeah.
Me, I play to fucking win. So I would jump. I'd tell you, Ryan Sickler, who's the weak link in that? Bert Kreischer. Everybody jump on. Everybody jump on.
Kreischer's the weak.
Everybody jump on Bert.
Right.
So we would all just get
Bert.
But I'm
saying you go first, but do you get to stay on the Bert's back and then the next part until he breaks,
I could crawl all the way up.
Oh, okay.
Let's say you put the skinny guy up front.
Okay.
Because there's different rules. There's English rules. There's black rules.
Yeah.
You know, there's white rules.
Right.
Black people didn't give a fuck. Where they landed, they landed. They had afros. They had the helmets. You know what I'm saying? In the 70s. So when you would, let's say you would land, like the English rules, you could pull yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
But in the black and white rules of the city kids, where you landed was where you landed.
And you stayed.
So I went for the weakest link.
Okay.
So let's say there was somebody like, let's say Burt, me, Tom, Rogan, Ari, and Duncan were playing, and Esther Koo. I'm just throwing Esther Koo out because she's a tiny girl. Let's say Esther Koo was, I want to play. Our plan is to break Esther Koo.
Yeah, I'm running
so
up there
Esther
and dropping
lands,
on Esther.
We're just gonna keep, and then this was the secret.
30 yards. I get to sprint 30 yards,
20 yards, 10 yards,
and then I just get to leap and try to break Esther.
But here's the beauty of it: once we all get on top of Esther Koo, then there's a count off: 10, 9, 8, and that's when you have to try to break them.
Oh, right? So what happens if they don't break?
So right now you're on top of Esther Koo, and everybody starts grabbing Esther Koo's tits. And a pussy, right? They just everybody, like so.
For Esther,
it could be Esther Koo, it could be Whitney Cummings. They all go down. Like the girls would be stop grabbing my tit. We'd be fucking choking them, pulling their fucking hair. So girls weren't allowed to play. After a while, girls were like, "That's too rough."
Yeah, no shit.
So then it was just guys.
Would the girls go dirty, too? Would you go balls
girls
and everything?
Oh, yeah. Girls would scratch you with their fucking...
Yeah.
And it was legal. Some girls were fucking dirty bitches. They'd scratch it. But let's say you landed on a guy. It was the same thing. It was count, and it was punching him
the balls.
Grabbing
right?
his
ball.
And he'd be yelling, stop grabbing my balls. One of you is a faggot. Why are you doing this to me? And all of us would just be punching his fucking nuts until the line breaks, and then we kept doing it over.
But what if the line doesn't break? What is
then
the
now
punishment?
It's their turn.
Oh, they get the all
and
right,
they're walking
switches.
Away from you with their hair messed up, going,
bleeding.
Now it's our turn, motherfucker. Fucking tremendous
buck,
game,
buck, dude. Buck, I remember buck. That. Yeah.
So I graduated from playing all those street games on 88th Street to 148th Street. That was a different type of individual. Like
what were they doing up there?
They were killers.
All right. Buck nutters.
Buck was like nothing for them. They didn't even play Buck.
There.
They played Buck with garbage cans, and they just threw it at each other. The kids on 148th Street were Puerto Rican, Irish, Italian, a couple Jews, and all of them were tough.
But we're talking same age range and everything.
Same age range.
Different world up here.
Before I got into Santeria, my mom would send me up to my godmother's house on 148th Street and Broadway, 20 blocks from the epicenter of the world, Harlem. You're 20 blocks from Harlem. I was the heartbeat of New York City. I'm 20 blocks from the heartbeat of New York City. 6'5".
Oh, wow.
So I'm hanging out down there on 88th Street playing Buck and killing rats. 148th Street. Complete,
6 years old, you're killing rats.
Complete different game. First day on 148th, they came up to me, how you doing? Ricky, whatever, and awesome. They're like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't know, I play stickball. And they're like, nah, you want to see a body? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, let's go see a dead body. I'm like, I like these kids. They took me down to West Side Avenue, and they had some guy who had been hit by a car. This is the 70s. This is like 65. There was no CSI. If you got hit by a car, you were there for like 2 or 3 days.
You saw that your first dead body.
The first dead body I saw, he was already had the flies on him, and they just threw plywood over him. And he was starting to stink like from 10 feet away. Like he had just been there maybe like, these kids were, he was right by the Hudson River. And we would walk down to the Hudson River. And then finally 2 days later, we went down and it was a crime scene, obviously. Some fucking, you know, in those days, people didn't jog. It's not like today that there's jogging.
Yeah.
I can kill you. I can kill you and drop you on a 170. They'd never find you. Today, these fucking joggers, they're out there looking around. And they always find bodies, joggers. It's not like they find like a $20 bill. You never see a jogger go, I found an envelope full of money. They always find some lady beat up and raped. What the fuck kind of morning is that?
Oh my god. Oh shit. We're only at 6. All this, we're only at 6. Holy shit.
And I was ashamed. I was ashamed of going up there because
why?
Because my mother had money and these kids didn't.
All right, so what was the reason you first went up there? Just
because my godmother lived up there, and my mother wanted to see if we could mix.
So your mom would go up with you,
with
and then
me,
you'd go outside and play with those kids.
And play, and then she had a dog named Lassie, a collie. And even though I was allergic to dogs and my eyes would swell up, I really liked going up there and playing with the fucking dog. So over time, my mom let me do sleepovers up there. You know, she had an older daughter. My godmother name was Beva. Rest in peace, and her husband's name was Raul, and they had a spare bedroom, and I would just go up there, and then she would talk to me about Santeria, little by little. So every day she'd tell me a story. She would just tell me things, you know, like little things, like, you know, like a story about, like when I went, I always liked Catholic stories, like Frank's, I don't know what saint it was, he got accused of murder, and when he went to court, a note came from the heavens and said he was innocent or something. You know, when you get into those Catholic-type stories, I really enjoyed that shit as a kid. But in Santeria, they're entities, but they're supposed to be, they hid them from the slaves in Cuba, the slave owners in Cuba, by tying them in with these same Catholic saints. So nobody would really know. So she would just tell me little things and little stories. And then she would let me sit in when she did readings. You know, like she would let me sit in.
She would do them like in the living room at the place?
No, she had like her own little room with her saints and shit. You know, at this time I had never seen chickens' heads getting cut or nothing like that.
So I want to talk about it. Yeah, you saw
it. Yeah, like at that time I wasn't hip to that. That's not what I wanted to do or nothing like that. And it was just about love. It was just, she would just tell me about different things.
You say sit in with people from the neighborhood, come over. And
yeah,
do
they
readings.
Pay like $40, and you read them, not their future, but tell them, you know, who's working against them, what they can't eat, what they can't do.
So So more of a guide, sort of?
Yeah.
Okay, so, a spiritual guide?
Yeah. So with me, like this, it's just like Catholicism. You have to receive, like, first you have to get baptized, and then you have to get, so the first things you receive are the thing named Eligua.
Is the baptism the same as the same style as Catholic?
No, they don't throw no water at you. They kill a chicken.
Yeah.
And they fucking give you this thing called Eleguan or Ogun, and you put them by your door, and they guard your house, and blah, 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 blah. And then you graduate to other things, and then let's say you want to commit to the religion, then that's a complete different thing. Like, there's people who go to Cuba today and do the whole week-long ceremony. It's a week. No phone calls, no TV. It's a week. And for me to get healthy, that was the only way I was going to get healthy. So I agreed to do it if my mother did it. So we both did it together.
Okay.
It wasn't like my mom. I can't stand when parents put their kids into cults. If you want to be an asshole and blow the cult leader, leave your kid with the grandmother.
Yes.
I dated a girl for years who I loved dearly. In fact, today we're still very close. And the only reason why we didn't pass a certain point was because the parents involved those kids in a cult. And I always used to tell her, you got to press charges on them because they were victims of stupid. I don't know. The mother and father went to Mexico to go to school. They joined the cult and they moved to Indiana. And, you know, they have 9 kids, but 4 of them belong to the cult leader.
For real?
And they live as a family today like nothing happened. And I'm like, I wanted to smack your mother and father. Because if you want to be an asshole and go to Jonestown, that's fine, Ryan Sickler. I wish you all luck in the world. But leave the kid with me.
Yeah, I'll leave
Stella. Leave your kid with me, and I'll take care of him the best ability that I can. Don't take him down to Guyana because you want to be an asshole. You know? No, in that case, in my case, I wanted to do it. My mother gave me 1,000 options, and I'm like, no, I want to be healthy. I want to do it, and it's a week-long process. It starts on a Friday. And they don't let you out till Friday. Then you got to dress them white for a year.
All right. So, yeah, what are you doing that week? How old are you when you go?
6.
All right. Do you remember what you had to go through, some of what you did that week? Yeah, what rituals? Yeah. Like, what would you do?
Rituals. I can't tell you all the fucking rituals, but it's like being born again. You start from scratch, and they shave your head.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they do.
And you go into the next level.
Is there any water dunking or any of that?
No, they take you. You got to go to an ocean.
You do?
Yeah, and jump in. And I'll never forget that they were all dark-skinned Cubans. And I did my saint in November. And it was so cold that they had to break. It was a river. They had to break the river to get the water to pour over my head. So while they're doing it to my mom, I'm like, fuck you fucking Negroes. And I started running. And they're chasing me in the Bronx. Come back. Come back. So they brought me back. They hit me with the whatever your saint is. That's how many scoops you get. I got 8.
8 freezing waters, cold, man.
And then you go somewhere and you have to close your eyes and they initiate you and the whole thing. And then Sunday is your big day. Sunday is when they tell you about your future and what things you have to avoid in life. And I sit here before you at the age of 56. I'm going to have my 50th year of anniversary of being a... I have my stuff. I practice to myself. But I don't practice it with other people. Like, I don't go out. I don't go to Santeria parties, even though I've been invited to thousands of them. Because the guy who played Idi Amin, what's that big black guy that was the black guy in the movie with Sean Penn?
Oh, Forrest Whitaker?
Yes. Forrest Whitaker's a big Santeria guy.
Oh, he is?
Oh, yeah. The model that got fired for eating pussy in Playboy. She won
Vanessa
Miss
Williams?
Vanessa Williams.
Really? I love how you're fucking your descriptions that I'm getting.
It's the truth.
That was Fast Times at Ridgemont.
So all those guys, there's a big black community that has an involvement in Santeria. I went to one party, and there was no offense against them. I didn't like it because I was raised in a Cuban Santeria environment.
And is that where it started? Is it a Cuban religion?
Yes, it came from the slaves in Africa.
They went to Cuba,
and they practiced in Cuba. It's in Cuban culture. Cuban culture... We're like the Filipinos. You know, there's so much. A lot of people don't know this. The biggest Chinatown in the world outside of China till 1959 was Cuba.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Cuba had the biggest Chinatown in the fucking...
San Francisco. Maybe that's
Cuba would eat it up till 1959.
Wow.
Till Fidel took over, They had the biggest Chinatown and influenced Cuba. That's why when you go to a Cuban restaurant, the last thing on the menu is Cuban-style Chinese fried rice.
Oh.
You know?
I'm going to pay attention to that.
I do acupuncture because my mother did acupuncture. When we were kids, every like Thursday, my mother drove me down to Chinatown to buy minerals and herbs. What good did it do? She snorted coke. It defeats the purpose.
I was just about to saying? Ask about the minerals.
When it comes to the minerals, the Colombians always win. You know what I'm saying? I used to go to acupuncture to stop snorting coke.
Yeah.
And she put like a needle in my ear, and I'd still snort coke that night. The needle would fly out of my ear.
All right. So do you start to see changes in health and everything now that you're practicing?
Confidence, health.
Allergies getting
settling.
Better.
I was more settled. As a young kid, I wasn't settled after my father's death. His death really fucking irked me. Like, it really. And then.
And what
my confidence, my self-confidence, not having a father. But my mother was a tough motherfucker. She doubled as much as she can, but you still need a father's love.
But all the time, they're talking to you about your dad, though.
There's photos my father. Yeah, everything.
You're asking.
Yeah, there was two specific guys that, my God, I was baptized Catholic. And
again,
I am old school Catholic. If Ryan Sickler comes to me and says, I'm having a child and I want you to be the godfather, I have to sit Ryan down and explain to him what my rules are as a godfather. Because these white people today, they've just baptized your kid. They have no respect.
I love these. A friend of mine said, here's the deal with me
respect.
And he was like, I'm not the godfather.
Yeah, no respect. If Ryan Sickler comes to me and says, I want you to be Nicholas's godfather, Nicholas knows one thing for sure. If I'm not on the road on Saturday, I have to break away from my daughter for 2 hours every Saturday for my date with Nicholas. And when I get to the house, you're supposed to say to me, do me a favor. He didn't eat breakfast on Tuesday, and he's getting B's on his report card. Talk to him, because I'm through with him. Like, that's... It's a two-hand game. It's a psychological game. So now your godfather, he's the good guy. He takes you to the movies. He takes you to the toy store. But he tells you to listen to your fucking mother and eat all your fucking steak. Or I can't come over no more. Your mother won't let me to take you out. I had a really good godfather.
And who was it?
His name was Gabilan. And he grew up with my father in Cuba.
Okay.
And he had a hot wife. But after he baptized me, him and his wife broke up. And I had to pick a side. So my mother picked Gabby because they had grown up together. But every time I would go to Miami, that godmother would come visit me, give me $1,000.
Wow.
Spend the day with me, hug me, kiss me. And she said, you can't go back and tell your mother because I'm not allowed to do this. They'll kill me. But you're my godson. So she risked her life to come see me. So I had a Santeria godmother and I had a real godmother.
Okay.
But my godfather was Aces. Aces.
Yeah.
First motherfucker that ever. When I was about 8, he took me to see 2 chicks eat their pussies out. that type of dude. Like that type of godfather. That. And if you tell your mother, I'll fuck it, I can't come by. Like he had me. He was the baddest motherfucker in the world.
Where did he take you? Where do you go to see that?
Somewhere in Midtown Manhattan.
A movie? What
he was
are you
a pot smoker.
About?
He was a heavy duty pot smoker. So as soon as I got in his car, he would roll a joint in front of me when I was 5 and go, don't say nothing to your mother. Even though I knew my mother smoked.
Okay.
So he'd roll a joint. He was one of those guys that smoked it.
Yeah.
And then he got giggly with me.
Yeah.
So then we'd go to 42nd Street. He'd park. We'd get a hot dog. And he'd let me pick a movie. Like, so the first 2 times, he took me to see, like, The World's Greatest Athlete and The Love Bug. And then he sat me down and he's like, listen. I ain't taking you to those faggy movies no more. So he started taking me. The first movie he took me to was the Valachi Papers.
I don't even know that one.
Yeah, Charles Bronson as Joe Valachi when he ratted. And that was it. I was hooked. So every Saturday, every other Saturday, he took me to all those famous movies. The Killer Elite. I mean, across 110th Street. Like, he was taking me to see adult movies, even though I was telling my mother I went to see Disneyland.
Yeah.
And then, so, but the movie that he took me that was just traumatizing. And he did this, guys. He did this till I was about 12, guys. He did this till I was about 12. That was his dedication. That's why I'm the way I am, because I was raised around people who were very consistent like that. It was a big piece of their life. But I still remember going to see Dirty Harry with him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Going to the movie, leaving Dirty Harry, we went to Tad's Steakhouse in New York. It's still there. If you eat at Tad's, you're going to die. Because it's like a fucking steak. It's like a steak that's just 2 days older than a steak-em. And they didn't freeze it. It's like a black guy's leg, and they throw it, and they give you a baked potato, a salad, garlic bread, and Jello.
Jello. That's yeah. They, awesome.
Oh, that's the whole thing. Jello with whipped cream, I'd lose my mind.
Oh, shit.
And I'll never forget, after, like, by this time, he was already smoking dope in front of me. He was already giggling in front of me. And he would always ask me, you like girls? And I go, I don't know. And he would go, what do you mean you don't know? So he would take me to his girlfriend's house and make out with them. And then on the way out, he grabbed that tit. And he go, you got to grab that tit when you get older. He'd say shit like that to me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then about a year later.
I'm 8, man.
And then about a year later, he goes, I'm going to take you somewhere where you can't tell your mom. And he took me to this girlfriend of his house with another young chick there. And they just started eating each other out and using dildos. And I was about 8. All I could think about was going to sleep. Like, it was so overwhelming.
They knew you were watching, or they didn't know?
No,
you were
they
watching.
Knew. He was giggling. What? He was giggling, smoking a joint, going, what do you think? What do you think of a pussy? And all this shit. Do you like it? Is that something that you would be attracted to?
Shit.
Because my mother was.
Is that something you would be attracted to?
My mother was very concerned. Because
he knows you're not yet. Wait. He's up there showing you this to go back to tell your mom that.
No, he didn't want to tell my mom. But the problem was, he did not want.
Holy shit.
My mom, when I was young, my mom had a bar and she hadn't remarried yet. So I was always surrounded by women. So my mom was scared that I would be gay. So she would make sure Gabby would talk to me about pussy and getting my dick sucked and all
Gabby's
this shit.
Like, I got this. Don't worry.
Gabby talked me into asking my babysitter for a blowjob the night that Muhammad Ali fought Joe Frazier. See if they could pull up the date. Whatever night Muhammad Ali fought Joe Frazier the first time, Gabby gave me money. Gabby asked me, you got money? Just give him money. Like, all these kids in school were talking about a blowjob. So I was 8 years old.
71.
I was 8.
Yeah, it's on my birthday, March 8th. You got.
There you go.
That's my goddamn birthday,
on
March 8th.
The day
8,
Joe Frazier fought Muhammad Ali at the Garden, my mother went to the fight, and she left me with a Puerto Rican babysitter.
And 2 years later to the day I was born.
2 years fucking later.
How about that?
No. On that day, I had a bunch of quarters and I had a bunch of signals because I used to hustle at my mother's bar. So I had a babysitter named Tita. And Tita came over.
Now, how old are you at this point? You're 9?
8.
8. Okay, 8.
8.
8. And Tina's how old?
She's about 14. 31.
What?
Yeah, 32.
Well, that's a woman.
My mother's about. My mother died when she was 48.
Oh my God. Okay.
So my mother was about 40. Yeah, she was about 40, 41. Tita was about 32, 33, and she was babysitting me, and I had it all planned up. I waited for my mother to leave, and I had like a bag of change and a couple dollars in there, and I went right out there.
And
I go, Tita, let me ask you a question. Because my godfather told me to ask her.
Yeah.
Because he kept telling me, where do you get your dick sucked? It's going to be great. You're going to love it. I'm
and
like, what are you talking?
Suggesting you ask Tina?
I go, what do I, Tita. Tita.
Tita.
Tita. I go, where do I get my dick sucked? And he goes, ask your babysitter. Don't say nothing to your mother. So I went to Tita. On that night, about 7:30.
March 8th, 1971.
And I go, Tita, if I give you $20, will you suck my dick? And she's like, yeah, but you got to take a shower. At that time, I was dirty. I was a dirty little fuck. I didn't like showers every day. And that night, I took a shower. I put underwear on. I put like a gold chain on.
A gold chain?
I had cologne on. And what? I went to bed. And I waited for her to come in and suck my dick. I'm like, Tita, I'm ready. And I had my little tidy whities on, no skid marks, the whole fucking thing. And this dirty bitch comes in and blows on my stomach. And she goes, that's a blowjob. And she walks out. And I go, that's not a blowjob. So I started arguing. I started arguing with her, right? This argument went on for about an hour. I want my money back, Tita.
8 years old.
I'm like, I want my fucking money back. Are people going to get hurt and all this shit?
People are going to get hurt.
She calls my mother. She's like, I don't know what's going on with him. You know, you better talk to him. He's threatening me and all this shit. I mean, I went crazy. When I was a young kid, I used to play like bingo with my mom. And I would go to the bar and clean toilets. And my mom would make me stick my hand in the tampon box and take the tampon out.
Out?
Out. So when I got $10, it was my $10 and I was going to kill you for it. Like there was no charity in my world. I remember like my mother going, they want a dollar for the Heart Association. They're not going to get it from me. And my mom was like, you have to learn to donate. I'm not donating shit. I got to go clean latrines for this money. So I gave Tita like my hard-earned $20, and she didn't suck my dick. I barely went to sleep. Like I was crying all night. And then my mother came home at 3, and when I got up that morning, my mother went to give me the Tita was asleep on the couch. And my mother was in the room, like, making eggs, getting the emulsive of cod ready. And here I am sharpening a knife. Like, I was that crazy at that age. Like, I was sharpening a knife. And my mom was like, what's going on with you anymore? Let me tell you. And my mom's... My poor mother. God rest her soul. My poor mother. She's hungover. She probably did a gram of blow the night before. A dirty cocktail. And she's smoking a cigarette. She's like, what's going on with you this morning? I go, listen, let me tell you what happened last night. And I'm telling her this in Spanish. I go, mira, le di 20 pesos a Tita para que me mamara la pinga. And she wouldn't suck it. She didn't suck it. I want my $20 back. And it, like, took my mother for, like, a fucking loop. Like, she was like, come again?
Yeah, I can't even
And I'm
imagine.
Like, listen, man, I gave Tita $20 to suck my dick last night. And she didn't do it. I want my $20 back. And I'll never forget my mother just smoking that cigarette, looking at me going, like, she was just starting to worry. And she goes, can I ask you a question? I go, what? She goes, there's women that hang out at my bar, and they get $100, maybe $50 for a blowjob. Why would Tita suck your little dick for $20? And I'm like, listen, I don't know what the fucking stock market or the stock value is. All I know is all my $20, I'm going to stab this bitch. And as I went, like, I was sharpening, and I'm dead serious. Like, I remember I was ready to kill her for my $20.
This is March 9th, 1971.
I was going to wake her up like Henry Hill's wife with a knife to her throat and say, you better give me my $20 or I'm going to stab you right now. It got so bad in the living room, and my mother had to hold me back that my mother gave me the $20.
Tita just wouldn't give it up?
Tita would not give it up, and I didn't talk to Tita for months after that. I hit her in the head with a shoehorn about a year later because she wouldn't let me watch Hawaii 5-0. Hawaii 5-0 was on, and she told me how to go to bed. And I had one of those shoehorns on a string. Mm-hmm. I just blasted her on the fucking head with it.
Oh, my God.
And that was the end of the Tita fucking babysitting thing. But it's crazy how my godfather took me to see Dirty Harry. We were sitting at Tad's Steakhouse. And at the end, he goes, open your hands. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, open your hands under the table. And he put a .44 Magnum in my hand.
A .44 in an 8-year-old's hand?
And he goes, this is the same
That's
gun.
A cannon.
This is the same gun that Clint Eastwood
Dirty
has.
Dirty Harry, yeah.
It'll blow your fucking head off. I just wanted you to feel what a gun felt like. And after that, I got a different look in my eye. Like, after that, I was like, he was my God. He was like my God, you know?
Yeah.
After that, my mom remarried before all this shit happened. Like, I got good after my mom remarried. My mom got married 50 years ago, 2 or 3 days ago, when the moon landed, when the jerk-offs landed on the moon. whatever the fuck. That wasn't even the moon. You could tell it was fucking Santa Barbara dirt. That wasn't even the moon. And I'm not even a conspiracy theory. There's no way that was the moon. That looked like Yankee Stadium with dirt on the floor.
Let's take a quick break to tell you about our sponsor, ExpressVPN. If you believe that you're not being snooped on or that nobody cares about your online data, well, then I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you are wrong. Because you listen to my show, you're clearly smart enough to understand that your privacy is under attack, all right? Hackers, governments, ad companies, and ISPs are all gobbling up your data, like all of it. That's why I recommend getting the software I trust to protect my online activity, ExpressVPN. Their apps use powerful encryption to secure your data. ExpressVPN runs in the background of your computer or your phone, and then you just use the internet like you normally would. You download the app, you click to connect, and voila, you're protected. I never go online without ExpressVPN, and you shouldn't do it either. ExpressVPN is the fastest VPN I've tried. It costs less than $7 a month, and it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. ExpressVPN uses new cutting-edge technology called Trusted Server to make sure there's no logs of what you do online. It's time to stop hackers, Big Brother, and internet companies from grabbing all your data. Take back your online privacy like I did with ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/honeydew. That's expressvpn.com/honeydew for 3 months. 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/honeydew to learn more. Now let's get back into the show.
So
wait, real quick. Your mom remarries. Do you get close with her new husband? Is he a stepfather or is he her second husband? How do you look at that? That's got to be
tough. He was a big time bookmaker. And I met him while he was doing time in Sing Sing. Sing Sing is in upstate New York.
He would send him visiting?
Yeah, he would send me pictures every week of Disney and Hercules and shit like that. He was phenomenal. Okay. And one day my mom said, "Do you want to go visit him? He wants to visit you." And I go, "Yeah, I don't know." And she goes, "We gotta get up early in the morning. It's like a 3-hour drive." And I would go up there and visit him and talk to him. And my mom was like, "What do you think of him?" And I'm like, "I guess he's okay. I'm like, except for the fucking black and white suit. He seems like a nice guy, you know what I'm saying?" So when he got out, he was dating my mother, but he was in a halfway house. So he would only come over for dinner.
And he had to go back there at night or whatever.
Yeah, and he had to go back at night. So it was pretty nice to have him around. He filled that void.
Was he good to you?
At that age, yes, he was. He taught me how to comb my hair. He taught me how to take showers, how to be a man, how to iron, how to color coordinate your suits. He just was just a great all-around guy. So my mom goes, "I'm going to marry him." And they got married on July 11th, 1969. So I was 6. And he moved in with us, and he was a great dad. He never laid a hand on me. He would make me kneel on beans.
What's that?
Like if I did something wrong.
Oh, really?
I would have to kneel on beans and stare at the wall. That was an old Cuban punishment. Or he would make me write in Spanish. I will not yell at my mother. I will not talk back to the teacher.
He was respectful to your mom. He was good to your mom.
At that time, everything was great. And he was just, he filled that void, you know. I got into karate. I used to get beat up. I used to get into a fight like 3 times a week with Rudy the Haitian. There was a kid on my block. He was a Haitian kid. He used to patois, all that shit. And he was Rudy. So we just called him Rudy the Haitian. When I was in the first grade of kindergarten, I played hooky. It was in the first grade. I was telling Steve Simone this yesterday. That in the first grade, my mom, the first grade didn't monitor you in kindergarten. So I would leave the first grade and go buy hot dogs.
Where? You just outside the corner. School? Yeah, you would leave the school?
Like I think if you made a right on PS 166, you hit like St. Nicholas. Or something else, correct me if anybody's from New York City, and there was a hot dog guy in the corner. So I would eat hot dogs, and I felt that the more hot dogs I ate, the more American I became. So I would eat hot dogs, and one day they caught me, and they said, "You're not allowed to go leave the building." And I didn't give a fuck. So now I knew that they had that route protected. And this is a true story. So they had Blimpie. They had a Blimpie base. And I loved their roast beef with lettuce and tomato and fucking vinegar and oil with mayo. And one day I'm walking, and guess who picks me up? The truant officer. And he goes, "You're supposed to be in school." And I go, "Oh, no." He goes, "Let's go back to your house." But I knew that my mother was sleeping, because my mother would get home at 3 in the morning from the bar. So I didn't knock on her door. I knocked on the neighbor's door, because I knew the neighbor was at work. So I said, "I told you, my mother's not home." And he goes, "Well, we could go either go back to school." And this is a true story, guys, whether you believe me or not. I go, "You hungry?" And he goes, "I could eat." So let's take a walk over to the Blimpie base. Do you know I bought this motherfucker a Blimpie and he let me go? In 1969,
that's unbelievable.
I bought this guy a Blimpie and he goes, "All right, we can't walk out of here together. Walk out, you make a left and I'll make a right." And that was it. I never saw the truant officer no more. So I kept playing hooky. Because they would call the house when my mom wouldn't answer the phone. I like school, but I didn't like that 12 to 3 session. Suck my dick. We only need 9 to 12, and I'm good. That 12 to 3, it don't work for me. You know what I'm saying? It's nice out. You want to sit me in a classroom like a fucking a prisoner of war. You know what I'm saying? So one day I go to Central Park. I had a lunchbox. My mother gave me a lunchbox. They made me bring a lunchbox. Like a Beatles or something. I fucking hated a lunchbox. I had the you ever have a, like white kids, you motherfuckers get like a sandwich and an apple and like a napkin and like a pudding. Not Spanish people. We get like Cuban soup in the thermos, cologne. A sandwich, rosary beads, a candlelight while we're eating, a napkin, Spanish music. They fit a radio in there. They do everything. Like it weighs 80 pounds. Like, if I flew United with that thing, they charged me a yardstick with a little Beetle lunchbox. So I figured if I told my mother I lost it, she wouldn't get me another lunchbox. So I went to, Central Park to throw it in the lake. And as I went to get to the lake, these three little Irish kids came up to me like, "What's in the lunchbox?" And I would have gave it to them, but I was like, "You're not taking it." And they're like, "We want the lunchbox." So I hit one of the kids with the lunchbox. It opened up. And I'm fighting the three kids. I'm getting my ass kicked. I'm 6'5". I don't know what I'm doing. And the kid hits me in the head with a thermos. Remember those metal thermoses with the glass inside? That one. And it hit me in the head. And I touched my hand. I had blood all over it. And I fucking ran home. And they couldn't take me to the hospital because my mother was in the bar in Jersey. So what they did was they sent me to the hospital. And they had to wait for my mom to get the consent form, and then they stitched me up. Do you know when my mom found out I played hooky? After they stitched me up, she beat me at the hospital. Like, she was just beat me at the hospital. Then another time,
you're in the right spot.
Let me tell you how retarded I was as a kid. But that beating I got changed my life. That beating woke me up to society. And then she put me in karate with black people. I was on 90th Street in West End, Mr. Orange. In fact, his son is one of Eddie Bravo's black belts.
Oh, wow.
Small of a world we have. Rashad is Mr. Orange's son. So that's where I learned to toughen up a little bit more. But here's a funny one for you, because I had to tell my wife the other day. There used to be a game play, "Please Don't Spill the Beans."
I played that for my daughter.
It was a pot. Yep. And you had to put beans in it, and it goes back and forth. So one Christmas, I get it for Christmas, and I'm sitting there watching The Wonderful World of Disney, whatever the fuck it is. And I take one of the beans, and I pop it in my ear, and I pop it out, and I pop it in my ear, and I pop it out. And I'm doing this for about a half hour. I pop it in my ear, but it won't come out. But you know me, I'm in the mafia at 6. I don't say nothing to nobody. I don't say nothing. Christmas Eve, I put it in, fuck it, it's good for something will happen. By fucking February, I'm walking around with like a tumor. Like my ear got big. They couldn't figure out what it was. And here's my mother coming home every night at 3, exhausted, because my mother fucking worked. Let's get one thing straight. My mother was a functioning alcoholic. What most people do sober, my mother could eat your ass alive and with logic. She was business savvy, happy hour before happy hour was invented. Just a fucking animal of a woman. What are we talking about? Oh.
Your ears.
So my mom would come home at 3:30, and I'd be crying like a little pussy. Oh, my ear. Not once did I mention the fucking bean in my ear. So here's my mother doing witchcraft, and she's putting hot oil in my ear, and they're telling her to hang me upside down, and, you know, she's staying awake with me every night, and she's suffering, and finally, they take me to New York, they take me to 165th and Broadway, the medical center there. I don't know what it's called, Cedar Sinai, whatever. We go, and at that time, like I said, guys, they knew me on first-name basis. Jose, hey, you're back. How you doing? And that's how much I used to go to the hospital. And they're like, what is it? You haven't been here for a year. You're like a stranger. What's going on? Like, I got a ear infection. They went in there, and I'll never forget, my mother was like 4 feet from me. They stuck in those tongs,
mm-hmm.
and he fucking goes, voila. You know, like the guy put like a tube in first,
yeah.
and they sucked half of it out. And then they stuck the thing in, and they pulled the bean out. And when that bean came out of my ear, my mother goes, what's that? And I go, oh, my God, how did that get in there? You know, and it was a wooden bean.
Yeah, I know exactly what it is.
And then a bunch of earwax came out.
Oh,
like it was just disgusting.
God.
But holy the bean, shit. She had put so much hot oil in there, the bean had cooked. Like it was a wooden bean, and it was ready to eat now. Like it was ready to eat. Do you know my mother started throwing rights and lefts?
Like three fucking
surgeons had to hold my mom back. She was beating me with the purse. Oh, she fucked me up that time.
How'd that get
for
in
fucking
there?
6 months, I've been fucking staying up 24 hours a day.
Oh, God, thinking you have cancer, a brain tumor, anything.
I pray to God that she forgives me. And I, you know, it's so weird.
Oh,
like,
shit.
You don't really think about your parents till you become a parent. That's when your parents really,
yep.
you really think about them on a daily basis. Situations that you haven't thought of in 20 years come back because you did the same thing.
Don't you wish you could ask them, like, how did you handle this? What would you do here?
No.
What would you do now? What would you do differently? I wish
no.
I could ask
I would fucking
shit.
Hug her and go, thank you for not shooting me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Most people that are adults today forget Mother's Day and forget Father's Day, because I don't have them both. Both of them, my parents have been gone over 30 years. But every year I would go over there and give them a big hug and go, fuck Mother's Day and fuck Father's Day. It's March 9th. I just want to give you a hug and tell you thank you for not shooting me. Thank you for not drowning me like Casey Anthony.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for not selling me in the black market. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because there's a lot of fucked up.
We did a lot of
there.
Things
yeah.
to our parents. I mean, we really test it. We really do test our parents' patience. And that's without their lives, what they're going on in their
right,
lives.
Exactly.
You know, they're getting unemployed. Their boss is on their ass because they're not selling enough encyclopedias. Or,
right.
You know, it's so weird that if your parents are alive today, if you take anything from this podcast, once a year, man, go over there, give them a hug.
At least.
Bring them a blimpy sandwich and go, thank you for not killing me. Thank you very much for not killing me, because I see it. I have a daughter, and she's a great kid, but it's a lot of stress being a parent. It really is, whatever your financial status is, whatever. It's just a tough thing when you have a child, you know. So
what age now do things really start to shift? Like, when you start getting to be what age, or would you say you're running the streets?
Seven to eight, once I did the Saint. Once I got...
For a lot of kids, it's teens. I feel like
no.
you were younger than that.
For me, it was from seven, like
you're,
seven.
You're
to,
running the streets.
Second
by yourself
grade,
at night.
Second grade. I'm living at home on 88th Street. I'm allowed to play in front of the house. I was an arsonist. I used to light things on fire and then piss on them to turn them off. And then one day I didn't have enough piss.
Turn it off.
And one day I didn't have enough piss, and the building next to me went on fire.
Nah.
Oh, yes, I did.
You set
on
a building on fire.
205, the back of it. Not the whole building didn't burn on fire. Just the entrance to the back.
Okay, that's all.
It was like the stairs to the bottom.
Yeah.
And I would take newspapers and I would light them on fire and then pee. And then one day I showed my friends, I go, come here, I got a trick. And I threw a bunch of newspapers down there and lit it on fire. And I started peeing. The fire got bigger and bigger. Now, I lived on 205 West 88 AC, apartment 3A. And I didn't. My living room had a view of 88th Street from Broadway. But my bedroom did not have that. I had a view to a parking garage lot that was empty. So people would play stickball, and they would play tag in that yard. So I would take pennies and throw them out the window, and people would go, who's throwing pennies? You know what I'm saying? So I was terror. Some days I would throw eggs. Some days I would throw pennies. But the best thing I started doing ever was, you know what a 45 single is?
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day, they had these 45 singles. You have to put a little clip in the middle to put them in your thing.
Got the fat hole.
My mother had a record player at the bar. So every week, the record guy would come and rotate the singles that weren't popular, and I would go take them. So we lived on the third floor, and I would open my window, and I would hear kids playing back there. And you really couldn't see who was playing because there was a ledge. And I would take those singles and just whip them out the window like a fucking, what do you call those things that spin around? Not tomahawks, but the other things Indians used.
Boomerang,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like a boomerang. I did it about 19 times.
Just throwing them out there at their heads and shit.
And people would say, man, somebody keeps throwing singles out the window. And one day I clocked one of those kids with one of those singles.
I bet you that
I saw
like
a kid, and he looked like one of those guys from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like if I hit him with a machete across the head, he had like 3 stitches. He's like, I go, what happened to you? He goes, I don't know. I was playing stickball, and all of a sudden a disc hit me in the head. You have no idea how guilty I felt, but not really. I loved it. It was like, fuck it.
Of course you got
after
one.
After that, I would throw 10 of them out every morning. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, dude.
During the week, I would go to PS 166, and once Friday came, my mom would drop me off at Bevers on 148th, and there I would just run wild. Like Halloween, for example.
I want to ask you real quick. You're 7'8". Are you the only one of your age hanging in this group, or are there other 7'8"?
Everybody's 7 and 8.
Okay.
Now, everybody in this group, we all knew each other since we're about 5 and a half, and they're mixed ages, let's say from 5 to 10 and a half, 12.
So there's a couple older brothers in the crew.
Yeah, I hung out with Ricky Cedeno, but he had an older brother called Nelson Cedeno, and he had an older sister called Nancy Cedeno, who sang for a band called the New Riders of Purple Sage. And they were on the Midnight Special when I was a kid.
Okay.
And they lived on 148th and Broadway, 9 Puerto Ricans to an apartment. You know, I would go up there to sleep over, and I would feel embarrassed. Like, I never took them to my house because I had my own air conditioner. I had my own TV. These people
felt guilty.
Yeah, there were 7 people in a 1-bedroom, no air conditioning, fans, kids sleeping all over the floor. So I never played the card angle with them. I'd always bring up money and say that I worked for it, and I would always buy them sodas. I always took care of all those kids. But those kids knew how to take care of themselves. Like Halloween, for example, that was the best Halloweens I ever had because they had a rule. We don't fucking walk in a... Like where I lived on 88th Street, with the fags, you know, with all the faggy, you walk up the stairs and you knock on people's door. They refused to do that. They shook down business owners.
They go to a business.
6 of us were walking to a business and go, trick or treat. If that motherfucker didn't put a quarter in each of our baskets, like, we didn't accept candy. Like those kids.
That shit that everybody gets on.
We don't want
They're
candy.
Not ready for you.
We're not ready for candy. We don't take candy here. That's how tough these kids were.
Yeah.
They didn't want candy. They wanted quarters, pennies, nickels, and dimes. If you didn't give us each a quarter, be ready to get bombarded the next day with eggs at your business. And every other week after that, we would just break your window out of spite. So everybody knew from 145th Street.
These are 7 and 8 year olds. I can't even.
These kids were tough. They shoveled the front of your business. And these kids never waited for a handout. These kids didn't want a handout. Ricky and Nelson Cedeno and a couple other kids, when it snowed, they were out there at 6 shoveling businesses. They would pull the garbage cans out for people and charge them a vig, $2 a week. These kids taught me what it was to, and they were tough.
That's a good hustle.
Like, they were firm. Like I said, Halloween, we don't want candy. We don't do candy. We don't knock on doors. We don't go upstairs. They're like, that's for fucking little faggy kids that do that. We shake down business owners at that age. And what happened was, my mother didn't like that. My mother didn't like that I was running with those kids. So my mom would do surprise attacks on me. My mom would just come out of a cab and go, Jose Antonio, get in that fuck. And then she would yell at my godmother, why do you let him out there all day? Look at him. He's dirty. My mother didn't like that because my mom grew up poor. And she's like, I don't fucking work 15 hours a day for him to have a ripped shirt or to be dirty on his neck. Go take a fucking shower. And then she'd take me away for 3 days, but she knew that was my life. 148th Street, that was my thing. And then the final, then, you know, I told my wife this about a year ago. I used to get, at that time, something was found on me that I would get shaken down before I left the house and when I came back.
By your mom?
By my mom.
What?
She found, like, one day I went out and I came home and she had like $100 on me. Like from the bar, because at the bar, I had a scam at my mother's bar. When bookies came in with mistresses, I would go over and talk to them and like throw hints that I was going to talk about the wife. And I would talk to them.
Break you off a little something.
Yeah, until they were like, what's it going to take for you to leave? Give me $5.
What's it going to take for you to leave?
Like, I would go up to them and talk to them about their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd go, man, I can't wait to go back to your house and eat that chicken again. And I would just, and they would just look at me. And then they, like, pull me aside. Like, why don't you take $10? Go up the corner, get a hot dog. So I would rake in, like, 50 a night just by shaking down guys talking. Can you imagine? You got 3 lines of coke in you and a couple cocktails, and the woman of your dreams is sitting next to you, and I come up to you to tell you about an episode. And I would give you like an ear beating about Scooby-Doo, like just for 20 minutes. Let me tell you what Scooby-Doo did today. And they'd be sitting there like, why do I need this?
Right? Yeah.
What's it going to take to get rid of you? I don't know, maybe $4. So my mother made a rule that nobody was allowed to give me money at the bar.
Oh, man.
But it didn't matter. Yeah, she didn't know what I was doing to them. She didn't know that I was shaking them down mentally. Like, go up to them and start going, hey, how's your wife? I'm not married no more. And then they would throw me a 20. Take a hike, kid.
Yeah.
And this went on. So my mother found me one day with, like, $80. Here I am, 7 years old, and I got, like, an equivalent of $200 in my pocket. And she goes, that's it. So she would make me put money in the bank every week, and I was only allowed to leave the house with $10. But I swear to God, I should be embarrassed about telling this story, but I'm not because it happened. Before I would leave, she'd go, all right, hands up.
And she'd pat you down?
Pat me down. I had to empty my pockets. She'd go take my sneakers off. And there were times I tried to put the 20 in my sneaker.
Where were you hiding?
That was take it off, a smack to the face, and go to your room, you're punished. So I got to the point where I couldn't get away with nothing around her. So I would go, she'd shake me down, I'd leave. And then when I came back, she'd shake me down and leave. But then one Sunday, she pulled a surprise attack on me during the summer up on 148th Street, and I had bought a James Bond knife. Here, type up a James Bond knife from the 70s. There you go. Look at the size of this knife. When I was 7, I bought a James Bond knife. And she surprise attacked me and went in my pocket and found that knife. And that was it. That was the end of fucking Joe Diaz. She put me in captain's. She threatened me with Loyola Military Academy in Miami and Sacred Heart School for Boys. And she went with Sacred Heart School for Boys. So from the 3rd grade to the 5th grade, she didn't want to deal with it.
Boys' school.
And there was other factors that happened.
But was that, did you go away to that? Or do you
No, it was in Kearney, New Jersey.
But you stay home and go in the morning?
No.
Okay.
They drop you off on Thursday, and you get, they drop you off on Thursday, and you get picked up. They drop you off on Sunday, and you get picked up Thursday. But let me tell you what else was going on in my life. When my stepfather moved in, my stepfather was a good man. My stepfather was always a good man. In fact, there's things that I do today that I ended up hating him, and I got my beefs with him, and he died, and we made our peace in a way. But there's things I do today that I learned from him that have got me to where I am, because he was that smart, street smart. He was that intelligent. He played you like a fiddle. If he had to meet you to talk to you and he wasn't sure about you, if he had to meet you at 9, he'd come here at 6 and plant 2 guns and a knife. So, I mean, this guy was a genius. He was a fucking genius. You know, and I told one of the stories on Ari's thing that, you know, when he got off parole and probation, he could go back to bookmaking, but he couldn't do it in New Jersey. Because in New Jersey, bookmaking is a felony, but in New York City, it's a misdemeanor. So his bank was up in the Bronx. The tracks close at 2. Like, you know the number for the day by 2. So after you add up and pay everybody, you're pretty much on the way home by 3:15. And one day I was coming home with him, and this is my first view of ever him. We were at a light, and he saw a guy hitting a dog. And he beeped at the guy, and he goes, "Don't hit that dog." And the guy goes, "Fuck you and mind your business." He didn't even pull the car over. He just put it in park and got out.
In the street?
Dead of the street in the Bronx, and just proceeded to throw a beating on this guy. Like, I mean, broke his fucking face, kicked him again, because when you're Cuban from that part, you dedicate your life to San Lazaro, so you can't mess with dogs. People who dedicate their lives to San Lazaro in Cuba, like when Michael Vick got sentenced, there was a lot of prisons he couldn't go to because there was Abaqua Cubans there.
And they'll kill you?
They'll kill you.
Really?
You don't touch
what
a dog.
What is it about the dog?
It's St. Lazaro. He's the patron saint of Cuba.
Okay.
St. Lazaro is the patron saint of Cuba. His birthday is December 17th. Any Cuban on December 17th is losing his mind. December 16th, you stay up till midnight, you light candles, and you pray to him for the following year that everything works out. So he's big in Cuba. So you have to, like, my mother hated dogs. But if my mother saw a dog, she would have to give him food. And like, you know, I got puppies when I was a kid once, and my mother would go, "Get these fucking dogs away from me." And I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and the dogs would be licking it. And then she would go get bones from the butcher and boil them to get the gravy out of the bones, and she would pour it over their food. So no matter how much my mom hated dogs, her DNA told her genes. It's deep in your Cuban genes. But to make a long story short, so he threw a beat on that guy, and I was
in shock. And you're just in the car watching.
Yeah. And I never said nothing to my mother. Like, I was like, this is too much to be true. Then about 6 months later, me and my mom were going to a Met game. And my mom gave the cab driver a tip and said, "Take me to the Met game, but take this route." And the guy goes, no, this route's quicker. My mom goes, "Take the fucking route, I'm telling you." The guy goes, "This route's quicker. Something happened. There was traffic." My mother said, "I told you there was going to be traffic," because my mother didn't like missing batting practice or the national anthem.
Big on the national anthem.
So she was big on the national anthem. So she was going to get late. So she got into an argument with the guy. She goes, "Pull over. I'll get a different cab." And the guy's like, "I'm not pulling over." So at a light, my mother went and took the keys out of the ignition and said, "I'm going to call Juan. I'm going to call the police." And the guy's like, "Call the police, lady." But when they were wrestling, my mother cut her hand on the keys. So my mother called Juan. Juan was like maybe 2 miles away at a bookie joint. And my mother put the blood on her face. So Juan.
You already knew what Juan did to that motherfucker that had
so
the doll.
Juan showed up.
Oh, shit.
And at that time, his partner our family partner in the bookmaking operation was Nelson. He was a Puerto Rican guy, Nelson Rivera. I loved him dearly. Him and his daughter Evie and his wife Delilah, I loved them dearly. He showed up with Nelson and Nelson's Mustang. And my stepdad's like, "What happened?" And I'm like, "Man," I was like a little fag. I'm like, "Mommy got hit and all this shit." And he's like, "Come with me." And I'll never forget, the guy had glasses. And I was part of the PAL. The PAL is the Police Athletic League. And the first thing they tell you is not to hit somebody with glasses. So I just think Juan's going to talk to him, you know. And Juan goes up to the guy, and the guy's a big, burly, white guy. And the guy's like, fuck you. She took my keys. I'm about to call the cops. And Juan, I remember, like, he took his left hand, and he just moved me an inch. And he fucking just leveled this guy. Glasses went flying. There was blood everywhere. And he got on top of this guy. And it's four, you know, it's 1 p.m, and he's punching this guy like a UFC fight. And in those days, that was New York City, dog, where people didn't say nothing. Nobody even stopped. Juan punched this guy like 50 fucking times. There was blood everywhere. Juan stopped punching him. The cops pulled up, but they pulled up behind the Mustang. They couldn't really see the guy. And this is the funniest story ever. Juan was slick. You know, Juan was here 80 years. And if you spoke English to him, he'd look at you and go, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Me no speak English. Two cops pulled out. I'll never forget this. Two cops pulled out, and as they came towards me, one turned, went in his pocket, and shook the guy's hand. It's like, isn't it a beautiful day? The guy had like 200 in his pocket. Juan and Nelson were talking. I'll never forget that. Now. And I'm like shitting a brick. Juan's got blood on his hand. The cops were saying on the nothing money to him. And all of a sudden, you hear like, oh. And the cop looked over, and he's like, what's going on with him? Like, he was like, what? And Juan's like, none. He fell. He's going to be fine. Hey, guys, have a good day. They just left the guy there. This was New York in the 70s. Look. They just left the guy there. Like, they didn't call an ambulance. Nothing. They were like, everything's cool. Nobody said nothing.
They didn't even call for
We all went home. And then, so now I'm like, fuck, this guy's on to something. And then about 6 months later, we're at a Santeria party on a Saturday night.
And he's in it as well, right?
He's not a Santeria guy. He's an Abaqua guy at the time.
What is that?
Abaqua are the longshoremen of Cuba. They're the male supremacy. What's that? They're like they don't eat pussy. They don't go into a room if there's a gay man in the room. They don't have communication with gay men.
Really?
Yeah, it's a society.
Is it a religion or a society?
It's a society. Okay.
Longshoremen society.
But now you could be gay and be in it. Like Yoel Romero was on Rogan with me, and we were talking about Abaquas, and he goes, this was a religion of men. You had to talk to them a certain way. You had to approach them a certain way. Like, let's say your name is Rick, what's your name? Ryan Sickler. But I grew up with you, and I call you Beansy. I'm allowed to call you Beansy.
I see.
But if some white kid comes up and goes, Beansy, you would pull him aside and go, excuse me? My name is Ryan Sickler. You ever call me Beansy out of line again, I'll stab you. And what they did,
these are fishermen.
You know what they did to you, right? You know what they? Let me tell you what the
it's so peaceful to fish.
Let me tell you what the masculinity level was of this, just so you know. When you had beef with them, they would beat you, whatever. But after you, when they got finished with you, they flip you over, they pull your pants down, and they slice your ass cheek. And that's a warning that the next time
they put a mark on it.
They put a mark on your ass cheek. That's like, I could have fucked you in the ass, but I gave you a breather, and I sliced your ass. The next time, I will fuck you in the ass. Don't ever disrespect me again. That was the level of masculinity machismo that this guy had. Like, he was up there. Nor did he drink alcohol.
He didn't.
He detested marijuana and any type of drug.
That's so weird to me.
He was by the book. And that's where the conflict with my mother came in. He didn't like the drinking. He didn't like the bars. He didn't like drunk people. So we're at a Santeria party about 6 months later at my godmother's house. Let me tell you how fucking crazy he was. He would read ladies' novellas. The Spanish novellas about love and shit, and he would wear glasses, and he would make believe he was half deaf, so he didn't have to. If you went up to him and I go, I gotta talk to you about something, hey, and you go, what about him? And I go, don't worry, he can't hear you. He would say that to people to let you think he was deaf. He wasn't deaf. Towards the end, when this guy was worth millions, you know that he still had the same car he had when he was married to my mother?
Really?
In 1979.
What was it?
An Eldorado, like the size of a ship.
Yeah.
2 miles to the gallon. He didn't believe in flash. He knew that the feds did math. Let me tell you how. Never did drugs. So this is not paranoia. This is intelligence. He was such a good bookmaker that he would not speak in a room where there was a phone hung up.
He was sitting on the receiver.
He said they still listen.
Yeah.
He would talk the outside. Very cautious, very smart. Took that pinch in 1966 and never took a pinch again. Took a pinch for shooting a guy and he got away with it. After my mother died, somebody tried to jump him and he took the guy's gun and shot him. At like 55, he shot both kids. And then he got into another beef later on, but he always stayed out of prison.
How long was he in when he did his bid?
When I was a kid, whatever. I don't know how long. Yeah, a few years.
And that was for bookmaking.
That was for bookmaking. Okay. And then... So we're at it's a summer night, like it's like a July, and there's a party at my godmother's, 148th Street. And there's a guy there named Nico Picadillo. His name is Nico. I don't know what his last name was, but his street name was Picadillo. Picadillo is a Cuban dish. It's chopped meat with raisins, olives, and little fried potatoes. Just not a lot of raisins, just enough raisins to throw off the beef. Is delicious. Mm-hmm. He ate it so much that they just called him Picadillo, you know. But the guy was a real jerk off. He was married to this woman named Rosaba, who was a real sweetheart of a lady. He had a bar on 143rd in Broadway called Nico's. So for some reason, my stepdad had a reputation in Cuba. He had four brothers, and they would call him Four Winds. Again. You couldn't call him Four Winds to his face.
Right, yeah, right.
His name was Juanito Cuatro Viento. That's four guys. That was his street name. You did not call him that. You either called him Juanito, but if you called him Cuatro Viento and you weren't friends with him, were you going to get an ear beaten or a smack or a gun put to your head? You never knew what situation it was. So at this time, I had seen guns from my godfather. I had seen guns at my mother's bar, you know, whatever. But I had never seen Juan with a weapon. I knew he carried a knife, a straight razor. He didn't even carry a knife. Those Cubans carry straight razors.
Just that little flip open one?
The ones that you shave with? Yeah. That shit does a lot of damage. So we're at the Santeria party, and Nico Picadillo has a couple cocktails in him. The party was in the living room where they were playing the conga drums and killing the chickens. Then there's a hallway. And there's a long hallway, and there's a kitchen, and then in the back there's two bedrooms. In the middle there, my godmother was the superintendent of the three buildings, so she had a path behind the kitchen to go to all three buildings. It's about 1 in the morning. It's me, my mother, and my godmother are talking in the kitchen. Juan is standing by the doorway with little faggy glasses on, reading a novella.
Pretending he's deaf.
And Nico walks back there with like half a bag, and he goes, look who it is. Cuatro Viento. And right away, I'm like, oh, no. My mother ignores it. My godmother ignores it. The poor guy's wife ignores it. And the guy's drunk. Now he comes into the kitchen, and he's telling these women, he goes, I knew this fucking bum in Cuba. Him and his four brothers weren't shit. So I go over and I immediately hold my stepdad's hand. And he's not saying a word, but I know he's hearing everything. I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good. And this guy's in the kitchen fucking saying shit, Cuban style, you know, like real big machismo. And this guy would have sucked my dick in Cuba if I would have met him in Cuba and all this shit. And finally, I see my stepdad take his glasses off and he goes, what's this fucking guy saying? And I'm like, nothing. I was like a little faggy kid. I'm like, nothing. He's just talking about the weather or some shit.
The weather.
And he looks over at Nico and he goes, you got a fucking problem? And Nico goes, yeah, I got a fucking problem. He pops up. And sure enough, my godfather doesn't run out or to the basement. He runs to the back bedroom where the Saints are, like the little, it was her Santeria room. And I guess he hit a 45 in there. And we're all like, what the fuck are they going there for?
You'd already set it up.
And this motherfucker comes out with a 405, with a 405, a 45 over his head, like just walking like nothing. Nico's already, like his wife grabbed him and said, you better get outside. And he's like, I'm not running for nobody, that whole thing. And I'll never forget that I went to hold my stepfather and he didn't push me off. But my godmother went to hold him and she just fell off him. It was like one of those tackles where you grab the guy.
He just fall right
and
off.
And he just fall off you. She just fell off him. And this idiot, and it was 148th Street in between Riverside Drive and Broadway, maybe 30, 20 yards away from the top of the corner. We run out. I come out there, and I'm like, Nico's got to be fucking running by now. Nico's in front of the place drunk. And he's like, fuck you. What are you going to do with that thing? There was like 30 people outside. He goes, what are you going to do with that thing? Shoot me. You don't have the balls. He goes, as a matter of fact, if you had the balls, if you're a man, you'd shoot me right in the dick. That was the level of machismo. One did not hesitate. He pointed the gun and shot this motherfucker. It hit him in the leg. The guy went down. Juan took me by the hand. We walked up to Broadway.
Walk.
Yeah. Nobody ran. We fucking started the car. We went, because 148 goes up. We hit 147, went right down. He went about two blocks. He pulled over. Me and him walked like 30 yards. We threw the gun into the Hudson River. We walked back to his car. We went home. Let me tell you something. We left my mother there. Like, that's how crazy it was. Like, fuck your mother. She should know the deal.
Your mom knows what's up.
Fucking, I go to bed like, Jesus, he just shot somebody last night. Like, I go to bed like nothing happened. I wake up the next morning, eating breakfast. There's my mom walking in. She's like, what, you couldn't have waited for me? Do you know that it was never discussed again?
You never were like, you shot somebody. There was no conversation about it.
Never again. I just knew that our family relations were ruined. We weren't going to be getting invited to a lot of parties anymore. Our party days were over with.
Oh, my God.
So Juan dies in 2006. This happens 1971, 1970. Yeah, this happened about 1970, 71. And I think by my mom seeing that and my reaction and everything, I think my mom knew it was time. Once the knife incident and the Juan incident, my mom knew that it was time for me to. I think that my mom had it with disciplining me. The next level was like a bat, and she wasn't going to do that. So she gave me to the nuns to. But here's the interesting thing about Juan. We never discussed it. Like, it was discussed around it, but it was never discussed with Juan. My mother dies.
Other people will be like, Juan shot that. Juan shot Juan Nico. Juan never thought anybody.
My mother dies. I go to prison. You know, thousand fucking things happen in our lives, you know. And him and I reconnect in like, I don't know, when The Sopranos got on the air. Him and I reconnect like in 90. Oh, when I went to do Analyze That, he gave me the ring. He gave me a good luck ring, and I booked Analyze That, and I wear that ring in every movie I do now. Out of respect for him. Even though he robbed me.
Juan gave you that? Yeah. I can't even say anything before some more shit.
Even though, you know, Juan took, you know, because when my mother died, they were married. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the house. I didn't get the jewelry. I didn't get a lot of things. And I'm happy that I didn't get it, because I always said that if I deserved to get it, I would get it somewhere in my life.
I believe that too, yeah.
And so I didn't make a big deal about it, but I put all my anger aside years later because I realized all the shit I had done to Juan growing up also. And we always were friends, and whenever I would go to Jersey to perform, I would always go to my buddy Chrissy Fish, and I would get a box of shrimp from him and bring it over to Juan's, and Juan would make this great dish called camarones enchilado. It's like a Cajun style shrimp with this red sauce with peas in it. And you put it on white rice and you cook those fried hard bananas.
Yeah, plantain.
So I would go over there around 5 and he had remarried and they were very nice. She was very nice and they would, you know, he would cook this for me and I would eat and we would talk and I'd give him a hug and he'd ask me if I needed money and he'd throw me like $15, you know. He'd go through a whole wad. He'd go in his wallet. He didn't even carry a wallet. He'd go to a thing and he had 3 inches of money. He was so cheap. And he'd just go through hundreds, fifties, and he'd give me like a 10. Like, you know, I'm fucking 40 years old. You know, but he meant well.
A 10.
So one night, him and I, this has to be 2005. The Longest Yard just came out. I brought him a poster. I brought him a copy of the movie. He was really happy. He kept telling me how I got to lose weight. You're getting too fat. And then I'll never forget that. We're sitting there, and I go, all right, I got to go. And I turned to him, like, wait, can I ask you a question, Juan? And he goes, what? I go, remember the time you shot Nico Picadillo on 148th Street? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. That's how old school he was. And when he died, I couldn't go to the wake that week. I was shooting something, but I had to go to Jersey the following week. And I went to see her just in case she was going to give me money, you know. She didn't give me shit. No jewelry, no nothing. But the funny story is when I used to come home from Catholic school, I would always, I would sleep at the house Friday and Saturdays. And one Saturday night, something was being done to my room, the air conditioner. So I had to sleep in the attic. And I went to him and I go, I got to tell you something. I'm scared of sleeping in the attic. And he goes, no worries. And he come back to the attic, and he had a small gun with a silencer on it. And he goes, here, if you see a ghost, shoot him. He took the bullets out, obviously, because I'm up all night shooting at the air, and I'm still hearing something. So about after he dies, I finish eating. His wife says, come over, and, you know, I give her a hug and my condolences, and she apologizes. And, you know, I thought she was going to say, hey, he left you jewelry or he left you some money. She goes, before you go, you're more than free to go in the room and see what he had in there. He was a hoarder. He had everything. You know, he was the type of guy, if he was driving down the street and he saw a TV, even though he was a millionaire.
Oh, really?
Yeah, even though he was a millionaire. He became a millionaire from loan sharking. He was very, very good at loan sharking. And he got into it with a bookie bank. So if you fell behind, he was the loan shark. He made great money over the years. But he was such a stoic that he lived in a fucking building where they had no elevator. And he walked 4 flights every day at 70, whatever he was. He was a great shape guy. Towards the end, I saw him without a shirt, and you could see half his shoulder was missing from a shotgun blast. I mean, the guy he had a scar. They tied him up in Cuba one time with a wire. And they squeezed it, and he had a scar.
All the way under?
And it was cheap stitches, so you could still see the holes. Like, as I was a kid, I would look at the guy and go, Jesus Christ, what type of life did he have? But I went in that room, and I was just going through boxes, and it was just garbage. But at the bottom of the box was the gun with the silencer.
Nuh-uh, was it?
That he had offered me years ago.
Yeah.
So I unscrewed the silencer, I took the gun, and I still got it. It's buried in Hollywood, just in case. Anybody gives me a hard time.
Well, listen, brother, I know we got to get you out of here. This is what I plan to do. We did childhood today. Next time you come back, we're going to do preteen. We're going to get you all the way through your years, brother.
Done.
Thank you for being here. Will you please, whatever you want to promote, your dates,
I got
DC, all that stuff.
August 9th at Lincoln Theater in DC. I got September 13th and 14th, the 13th in Dallas, and the 14th in San Antonio. And that's it. I got nothing else to promote. Just Ryan Sickler. My brother from a different mother.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
I got to give credit to Ryan. He's been calling me since he started the podcast, and I've just been busy. But I haven't done a podcast. This was the first one. I kept my word.
You did keep your word.
So thank you very much. You're a good man. I love you, too.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, RyanSickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.